say he's in the Guinness Book of Records. I don't mean when you open the front cover it says this book belongs to Beefy Blake. He's actually in it now. Beefy Blake from 365 Days of Sport joins me in the studio.
Thanks, Kev.
As you do with Brett on more than various occasions.
Yeah. Thanks, Kev. Thanks for having me again. I love it. And as you say, freshly inducted into the Guinness Book of Records for...
Is there an official induction?
Well, I don't know if it's an official induction. But you just get an email saying, "Yeah, you're in." Basically, it's about as good as that. It's like when you get the gold medal for, you know, after there's been drug cheats being disqualified, and you get your own little ceremony, you know, just in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, surely Bruce McAvaney's going to come and interview you, and they'll have a little ceremony at Crown Casino in front of your 40 or 50 invited friends, and we'll put the medal around. Yeah. What are you in the Guinness Book of Records for, incidentally?
It's a category probably never, ever been attempted before. If it has, people didn't even realise. But it was the most number of different sports seen in a year. Not necessarily a calendar year, not January the 1st to December 31st. I actually started October 24, yep. 2015. We started with the Speedway at Etihad Stadium.
Yep.
And I finished on October 22nd this year. It was a leap year, so we lost a day. And amazingly, I finished with the Victorian Rock Drilling Championships in Bendigo.
Oh, I missed that.
Did you? Yeah. It was all over the papers, Kev. surely, they, you know, Channel 9 crossed live to the Victorian Rock Drilling Championships. I can't believe you missed it.
Sorry, what's a Rock Drilling Championship?
Rock Drilling. Yeah,
this is what makes me laugh at you. You come up with these sports that just don't sound like sports.
That's right, but they take it very seriously. Yeah, old rock drillers. Basically, you get a jackhammer. There is a cylinder of concrete which you have to drill through. There's a little flag at the end of the cylinder of concrete. And once you drill through, you knock the flag over and that's it. You've got to drill straight. You've got to drill true. You've got to remember that.
Really?
Less is more, as they say. So they do it in relays. They do it in pairs where you have to drill two holes in the same concrete cylinder. It's amazing.
Riveting sport.
Yep. I'm not sure where the Victorians rank on the world scale of rock drilling, but I'm sure they're up there.
Oh, I could imagine that we must be.
When myself and Brett were talking about this last week, we were talking about rock drilling, and somebody actually texted in about... the World Roof Bolting Championships down at Fingal Valley in Tasmania, and I've since found out
just a bloke who's not really good at do-it-yourself. He's just told his mates that there's a championship and a chance at the Guinness Book of Records. If you come around and bolt my roof off, you'll be in the Guinness Book of Records.
That's it. But it is the same day as the World Coal Shoveling Championships as well, where you have to shovel half a ton of coal. The world record for shoveling half a ton of coal is 24 seconds.
Half a ton
hand shoveling, 24 seconds. Some local Tasmanian guy, probably a farmer or a
half a ton in 24 seconds.
Yeah,
that is a skill.
That's right.
Jeez,
it's a big shovel.
It must be a massive shovel.
Yeah. So amazing. So like I say, myself and Brett, we have a saying, there's a sport out there for everyone.
Oh, you're finding them.
Yeah, I find them.
You're on the coattails of them in the Guinness Book of Records, having watched.
That's right.
How many did you watch in 365?
306 in the end. So, the original goal, obviously, wasn't it? It was.
Yeah.
365 different sports in the space of 365 days was the original idea. Halfway through, we did run out of money. So the last 6 months of the whole trip, was spent in Victoria trying to find absolutely everything that was going on. Unfortunately, we missed out on a lot of the quirky British ones that would have kind of got us over the line. The
travel would have been a problem doing that, trying to get one a day for the
365 days. That was part of the challenge, was to plan a calendar to get around the world and get in 365 different sports. So, you know, you had to go to events. Like, as you know, I mean, I talked to you when we were in Greenland. We went to the Eskimo Olympics.
That's right.
And we picked up like 14 or 15 in a week. But unfortunately, there's only two or three flights a week that come out of Greenland to go elsewhere. And we got in a blizzard in Greenland that delayed us getting out of Greenland. We actually missed some events trying to get out of Greenland. We were a day late and we missed our connecting flight, so we missed a big festival in Colorado. So, you know, and we had a few setbacks like that along the way where we did miss a few. So I was constantly trying to rearrange the schedule, trying to find new sports and different sports that we could get to wherever we were and fit them in. So, yeah, it was a full-time job outside of actually going to see the sport.
Did marbles figure anywhere?
I'm not sure if you know this, but I actually got to the quarterfinal of the World Marbles Championship.
You did not.
Yes, we did. Myself and Rob, we were in Crawley in the UK. It's at Easter time. Yeah. The World Marbles Championship. We were there to see. And just to watch it, the night before, we got an email from the organisers saying, would you like to play? And we thought, well, to be honest, we were only there to see. And she said, we've had a couple of people drop out. We've got a team for you. Come and play. It'll be lots of fun. Now, they get teams from Germany and everything all
now,
over
is
Europe.
It, is it the circle?
And it is the circle. Yeah. There's 49 marbles in the middle.
Oh, wow.
So you have to flick. You have to have your knuckle
on the
concrete.
Oh, do you?
Okay. That's the rules. Wherever the ball ends. And you have to knock the middle marbles out. So it's basically the first to 25.
Yep.
And if you knock one out, you keep going. If you miss and your shooter stays in the ring,
how big a marble are you?
Yeah, pretty like standard size, I suppose. A pea, okay. A bit bigger than a pea, yeah. I guess. In between that,
like a grape,
chickpea. Yeah, grape. A bit smaller than a grape. Yeah. So the idea is you keep going first to 25. If you shoot and you don't knock one out of the ring and your shooter stays in the ring and they knock your shooter out, you're gone.
Gone. Yeah.
So in our team, we were lucky. We had the American champion. Marbles champion was in our team, hence why we got to the quarterfinals.
Right.
But so, unfortunately, though, in the quarterfinal, she got knocked out on the first go.
The American marbles champion is a girl.
Yes. Right, okay. Yeah. She takes a pretty. She's from a marbles family. How funny is that? She told us when she introduced us. She's from a marbles family. So yeah, I thought it was quite funny.
That's ridiculous.
So, and this is no joke. I actually knocked my other teammate out by accident as well. So it was left to me and a local lad to carry our hopes. We lost by 3 shots or 4 shots in the quarterfinal, and the team that we lost to went on to win the whole thing.
Oh, okay.
So, quarterfinals, World Marbles Championships. Yeah, but you weren't expecting that, Kev, were
no,
you?
No, I wasn't. I would love marbles when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But you didn't have to keep your knuckle on thing. Yeah. We used to have a thing where you could actually sort of have your other arm
and shoot off
the top of that like that, so you could actually get more into it. I think we cheated. There's no doubt about that.
No,
you made it to the quarterfinals of the marbles. It's from a marble family. How would you? How could you possibly let that come out of your mouth?
I know. Oh, she was pretty.
She
was a pretty eccentric type as well, but she was the American marbles champion. Make no jokes about it. And she was quite good. She got us through the early rounds, but when the crunch came to the crunch, you know, in the quarterfinals, she let us down.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly.
So we always when we first kind of designed this whole trip and everything, there was a lot of world championships along the way that, you know, I always dreamed about. You know, thought. You know, perhaps we could snag a world championship here along the way, because there were about 20.
Actually,
or 30.
Win one yourself.
Yeah. And I've been writing articles for a website recently about. They asked me to put together some realistic championship. If you had a New Year's resolution in 2017, you wanted to become a world champion. You know, what are your most genuine chances? You may not have the most sporting prowess going around or anything. What are your genuine chances of becoming a world champion? You know, and I've talked to BP about the world stinging nettle eating championships and the world black pudding throwing championships and welly wanging. And there's a few things like that. We've all seen the cheese rolling, although that's not a world championship. There's, you know, these are official world championships that you may possibly be able to go out and win. So
backyard cricket?
Well, is there a backyard cricket world championship?
There should be,
shouldn't there? How good would that
there
be?
There should be.
Get
or
your
beach,
mates
or
together.
Or even this time of year, beach cricket.
That's right.
You can play that around the world. I mean, even England has beaches of sorts.
Yeah, kind of. Not in Wales. We have these stone things that, best beaches in the world, Wales. It's just a bit cold.
No, but you could do a beach cricket.
Yeah, you definitely can.
With traditional beach cricket rules and stuff.
You know, and we talked to, there's a Melbourne sport called Trugo that there is.
Yeah, Yarraville they're based in. Yeah.
And, you know, you could easily put together this Trugo World Championship where anyone could come and play. You know, and we've talked to Michael at Ascot Vale Club, who's kind of a pioneer about trying to bring Trugo back to the masses.
He was on with you and
Brett
the other
day. Yeah, that's right. And so, I mean, we have this saying, we're taking it from Othello, you know, that little board game, a minute to learn, a lifetime to master, that type of thing. But it's those type of sports that you can kind of just pick up and run with, but all of a sudden you could become world champion. Like last weekend was the Air Hockey World Championships.
Oh, I love air hockey. Who doesn't love air hockey?
That's exactly right. And it's held in Houston, Texas last weekend. It was the Air Hockey World Championships, or the weekend before. So there are these sports out there.
There's a lot of broken fingers in a world championship of air hockey.
It'd be fairly full on, wouldn't it? So in terms of that, these world championships that are there that you can just take up, and this is the one I love. It's coming up late January, shovel racing. Now, how could you race a shovel?
Obvious question was going to be my first question. Go on.
Well, you sit on them, and you ski down a mountain sitting on a shovel. And Angel Fire Resort in New Mexico, it's normally the day before the Super Bowl, they normally have it, but you sit on a shovel and you slide down the mountain sitting on a shovel. But this is the Shovel Racing World Championships.
Don't you have 20 mates who immediately you can see doing
Australians?
Sober.
No, you don't need to get sober. You just, but that's the one for me. If you're mad enough, and you're prepared to sit on a shovel and go down a downhill ski course, then you too could perhaps be a world champion.
Now, you're not the only world you're not a world champion. You're in the Guinness Book of Records.
Yes.
But we've got a world champion, I think, on the phone now, or at least someone who knows a world champion. Ian's in Sunbury. Hi, Ian.
Yeah, hi. How are you going?
Yeah, good. Now, you've got a daughter who's a world champ.
That's right, yes. Just hang on a sec.
Oh, we're getting her.
Yeah, hello.
That's fine. Yeah, hello, yep.
Ian? Yes, Ian.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, look, 2 weeks ago she ran the 100 kilometre, or won the 100 kilometre in Spain.
Oh wow!
She beat a pretty intensive field. She was the Australian champion. Her Australian record was 7 hours 39.
Wow!
And she ran this one in 7 hours 34:25.
Beautiful! Wow. How brilliant is that, Ian? What's her name so we can kind of give her a bit of a pump up? She's a world champion.
She's a world champion, yeah, Kirsten Bull.
Kirsten Bull, brilliant. How good is that?
Good on you, Kirsten.
So, to run 100K straight, what kind of training is she going through? Obviously, you know, marathon runners try and get through about 400 to 500Ks a week coming in before they taper. So, how'd you go about training for a 100K run?
Yeah, she was doing a lot of kilometres. You'd ring her up for Sunday and she'd say, I've just come in from 60K training run. So,
Ian, is it a road race 100K run or is it a track race?
It varies depending on the country. Last year, she ran in Winschoten in Holland, and that was a bit of track running as well as road racing. This one was all road racing.
Wow. Jeez. And has she done things like Comrades in South Africa as well, which is obviously the biggest 100K run?
Hasn't done Comrades.
Yeah.
She's done quite a few ultramarathons in Victoria. She holds the record for the 2 bays run in Victoria, which is about 57K. She's won that three times.
Yeah.
Well, Kirsten Bull, we salute you. Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
Pass on our congrats,
Ian. World champion, you can't mug it. You know, we have a bit of fun with some of these lesser skilled world championships, but somebody to run 100K and bring another world championship back to Australia, that's something to be commended.
Good stuff. Good on you, Ian.
Thanks
for your call. Appreciate it. We're going to take a break. Come back more from Beefy Blake in the studio. 365 days of sport. Going to talk about songs and sport. And that lovely relationship between those two things, that's coming up. Beefy Blake is in the studio with me. Is your website still up and going?
Yeah. Still there. All the shows we did from the first kind of 3 or 4 months on the road was about 80-odd shows and a load of interviews and stuff like that we did. And, 365daysofsport.com. And then we're on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and stuff. Come and join us. It was a fantastic journey. It's something that's never, ever been done before.
Yep. Probably never be done again.
Well, I might have a go, You never. I've set the benchmark low at 306, if I ever want to do it again, I know what to beat if I want to update my world record. So,
now, look, you obviously went to a lot of sporting events, and you watch a lot of sporting events, as we all do, but part of the now part of the presentation of every sporting event now is a song or a pre-match entertainment or whatever it is.
Yep, exactly. And I'm a Victory fan. I do go and watch the Victory regularly. Obviously, was there last night and a great win away from home at home. But it's always good to beat Melbourne City. But, you know, like I say, when Victory played Liverpool a couple of years ago at the MCG, the world was blown away by "You'll Never Walk Alone," and 95,000 people all singing the same thing. Look, the hairs are going already. I was there that night. Yeah.
Let's have a listen.
You want to listen to that one?
Oh. Oh, I love you, Boofy. That was something else.
Yeah, it was, absolutely. And, you know, since that night, the victory have kind of moved on, and they've kind of got their own together at the start of the game with Stand By Me. But we've just been talking kind of off air.
Yep.
And
there's a new one emerged.
There is a new one emerged, and I think it's absolutely brilliant. It's hilarious, realistically. The fact that the Victory fans have kind of got together and are now singing.
Yeah, hang on, before
we're going to let you in, it's a bit of a surprise.
Because this has sort of happened organically.
That's what makes it extra special. The fact that it has happened as a fans' initiative and everyone's jumped on it.
And this, believe it or not, is the song that Victory fans sing after a win. I heard them do it after they beat Wellington 6-1 when I was there the other week. Here you go.
That's the way it's going to be.
Just don't get it.
I love it.
I love it too. Yeah. But I'm walking out and I'm hearing that. And I thought, let my son with me. And I thought, because he said, "What's up, Dad?" And I said, "They're singing the bloody horses." And he looked at me as if I was talking some sort of Esperanto thing. I said, "No, they can't be." And then I listened again. Yes, they are.
I think if the Victory get to host the grand final, you can book in Daryl Braithwaite for the pre-match entertainment. Daryl's got another gig.
Sings at the Cox Plate every year, and they actually, I won't say kicked him out, but they stopped. It all of a sudden became ill.
Yeah.
Oh no, you can't be singing having the horses and having Daryl perform
before. Yeah.
So they kicked him out, I reckon, for 2 years, and now he's back.
Now he's back. He's back.
Now, what other ones have you seen around the world? I mean, obviously the Liverpool one's probably the most famous.
Yeah, definitely.
All, I reckon.
There's a few in English football. West Ham have got "I'm Forever Blowing Bubbles," and Wolverhampton Wanderers have got this great one. It's "Hi-Ho Silver Lining," but they change it to "Hi-Ho Wolverhampton."
Oh,
and you've got to be there. It's very funny.
It's like
at the
bad
time.
Old Yankovic song.
Yeah, very true. So, but I went to college in the States, in Texas, and I've been to a lot of college football and college basketball.
Yeah.
And, you know, Penn State have their biggest one where they do the whiteout, and I think we might have a clip of Penn State. So,
all right. Penn State University,
the Nittany Lions.
Now, this is the college. This is the
college
football.
Yeah, okay. 80,000 people.
All right, let's have a listen. Actually, you know, that works.
Yeah, it does work.
That works.
You know, at Penn State as well, you've got to see it to believe it. 80,000 people, they do a whiteout every year where you wear a white t-shirt. They give you a little hand towel and you swing it around Archie Thompson style, you know. And yeah, it looks phenomenal. And so,
oh, no, that works. And usually Americans do this tacky to the point of, nth degree.
Goes without saying. And, I mean, Gonzaga, famous in their basketball for, you know, Kerncraft 3000, Kerncraft 4000 doing Zombie Nation. They take it to the four there as well.
We've got a bit of that. I think play
we've got
a little bit of the Gonzaga. Doesn't work as good as Neil.
Actually,
they'll be in basketball stadiums.
Yeah, and it's
smaller.
Enclosed. Actually, I went to the Euros. Obviously, I'm from Wales. Wales got to the semi-final, made a mad dash, and kind of UEFA kind of assigned songs to the teams. I mean, it was through... And Wales actually got assigned Zombie Nation for some unknown reason. Nobody's really quite sure. But in the end, Wales did so well, and their fans became this red wall. Now, Wales aren't necessarily, you know, a huge football nation. We never qualified for a major championships. 1958 was the last time World Cup in Sweden.
Yeah.
And we got to the semi-final of the Euros. But the Wales fans had such a great time. And the journey kept on going. And it kept on going. And these fans were just couldn't believe it. And then all of a sudden, the Welsh fans came up with this "Please Don't Take Me Home," and it just set the world alight. And I think we might have some coverage of "Please Don't Take Me Home."
Don't take me home. I just don't want to go to work. I want to stay here and drink more beer.
Oh, there just you go. Brilliant. See, now, it works now.
Yes.
You want to stay here and drink more beer. Now, we've got, happy to take your calls on this. The songs that fans sing before a game, during a game, after a game, whichever, 94291116, or text through your thoughts. Steve's in Burwood. G'day, Steve.
Hey, you my friend.
Good, thanks.
Okay, got a good one for the University of Wisconsin in their football team. The whole student body wears a red shirt, and they sing "Jump Around," 95,000 of them. You can feel the stadium actually bounce up and down. I've been there, and you know it's good when the other team starts jumping around, doing the jump around with the home team. It's actually on YouTube. Check it out.
All right, well, you're going to have a little listen to it right now, Steve.
Got it for you, Steve.
Prepare yourself, Steve. Here we go. Stephen Burwood is jumping around and he's everything's moving like you wouldn't believe. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. More of your calls on that, 9429 1116. Songs from sporting teams before, after or during events. More with Beefy Blake coming up after the break. 365daysofsport.com is the website. 21-4 here at 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. Beefy Blake is in the studio with me. We're talking about songs and sporting events. Now, often they're played beforehand, sometimes at halftime, sometimes, as now is happening with the Melbourne Victory, they're singing. The crowd is singing. That's when it works the best, is singing the old horses.
What were you saying about Perth Glory, Kev?
Oh, I had it on last night, and after the Melbourne Victory City game finished, just pottering around doing stuff, and then sort of looked to see if the game had started. It was about to start. And Bound for Glory.
Oh, Roast Tattoo.
Yes,
was playing.
And I thought, surely no one thinks that that's a good song for Perth Glory. And I'm looking, thinking, surely no one's singing it. And I couldn't, they didn't have a crowd shot. So I don't know if the crowd was singing it the way the Victory fans sing Stand By Me. But I thought, oh, no, surely you can't. You've got to do better than that.
Although saying that, in Australia, I mean, football's always been kind of the minority thing. So to get the crowds involved and get them coming back and getting the, and kind of... involving the kids in some form.
My son loves Stand By Me.
Yeah.
Loves it. Thinks it's great. And it is good the way they do it and all that sort of stuff. But it is a manufactured one.
Well, yeah, I think that the same. And like I say, we've kind of followed on from Liverpool's visit at the MCG. And you know, the A-League clubs are looking for a little bit something to bring the crowds in and get them more involved and feel part of the club, which is
kind of the right song.
Very true.
Stand By Me works much better than Bound. I hope Bound for Glory is not what they dived on. I'm scared to go to a game in Perth now because they might play that. I know Angry really well, and I don't want to sit through it.
We've got loads off the text messages.
Rangers play Penny Arcade, do they, before every
game? Well, obviously, if Andrew from Sky says that.
Is that like Penny Arcade, the Roy Orbison thing?
Oh, but
Step up and play, each machine seems to say, as I walk round and round the Penny Arcade.
It's before my time, Kev, I can't tell you.
That was gold then, Beefy.
It's better than me.
Yeah, West Virginia, what do they play?
Yeah. Take Me Home, Country Roads.
John Denver?
Yeah, Denver. Actually, I went to a cricket match in South Africa years ago, and they changed it to Take Me Home, Jaunty Roads, which is quite funny.
So
when you
get
were there.
Another weird Al Yankovic moment where you just change the words of stuff.
Take Me Home, Jaunty Roads. It was quite funny at the time.
Yeah, no, that would work well.
The Maestro. He reckons the Maestro in Q saying Celtic. Just can't get enough.
That's Depeche Mode?
Depeche Mode, indeed, yeah.
Yeah. There was another song by Bad Company in the 70s called Can't Get Enough. That was Can't Get Enough.
No, I'm pretty sure that was that's the solid one.
Depeche Mode?
And we're talking about You Never Walk Alone in Liverpool. I'm sure Celtic fans would have been ringing in about how Liverpool stole You Never Walk Alone from Celtic. That's a big
Did
debate.
They?
I'm not saying anything. I'm not.
Did they really?
Yeah, allegedly. That's the Celtic fans always claimed they sang You'll Never Walk Alone first.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there's history there, But I think, you know, anyone around the world...
But isn't it sort of the Jerry and the pacemakers?
That's exactly
whole
right.
Liverpool.
Who was Scousers, you know, anyway. Yeah,
yeah. Absolutely.
So it's an interesting one.
I thought it was all based around that.
Apparently Sam E. King sings... Benny King or Sammy King sings Penny Arcade.
I was about
Arcade,
to say,
so we might have
who's
to look this
Sammy
up.
King?
Yes, yeah, Benny King, I'm sure.
But it would be... I imagine it would be the Roy Orbison song from many years ago. Now, if you've got one, give us a buzz. 9429 1116 or more of your text thoughts on 0433 98 1116. Why do West Ham sing I'm Forever Blowing Bubbles?
I've got no idea, realistically, but they have a bubble machine at the side of the pitch. So before the game and after the game, in half time, it's automatic, huge bubbles. Millions and millions of bubbles blow out, and the crowd obviously sing. And I think there's a YouTube clip
that
somewhere
sounds tacky.
There's pictures of one of the West Ham players. He's actually scared of bubbles, and he freaks out every time there's bubbles. So when you walk out, definitely. Roy Orbison, Kev, you're right. Yeah. Penny Arcade, Roy Orbison.
Yeah,
that's
the song. They might have a different version of it. The Wanderers sing "I'm Gonna Be" by the Proclaimers.
Yeah, I think that's a slight on their trophy cabinet.
Oh, okay. Yes. There's someone taking the you know what. Thank you, Dean, for that one.
Yeah.
For the Western City Wanderers. Maybe Perth should do the Proclaimers, but they should do 500 miles. Remember that? Awful?
Well, that's it. Oh, what a tune.
Walk.
How good would that be round the crowd
at
the end?
See, you've got to pick the right song, too, that the crowd can actually sing. That is a song that doesn't require musical accompaniment.
Right.
Otherwise, it just sounds really dorky and silly.
Yeah, that's right.
If you need to sort of stop and have the air guitar solo in the middle of it, it doesn't work.
Yeah, that's it. And I think with horses, I think they're going to have to do a mix where they just loop a load of choruses together, because in between, when you're waiting for Daryl to kind of waffle on and with Jenny Morris, whoever it was.
Margaret Ehrlich.
Oh, Margaret Ehrlich, sorry. I'm not Australian, you have to realise this.
She's not either, she's a Kiwi.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, so, you know, we're waiting for the chorus to come in again before we can join in and, you know, absolutely bang it through.
Yeah, you've got a good point there. Good point. All right, it's a quarter to four. We should get a cricket update from the Gabba because it looks like...
Covers are on.
The weather might have come in. Let's find out.
An Australia-Pakistan Test cricket update.
Hey, Smoke, that beautiful Queensland weather you were pumping up before has taken a turn for the worse.
The clouds have rolled in, a little bit of rain about. There's been some action down the road from the Gabba. My spies tell me, Kev, and...
Has it actually started raining at the Gabba? Because Kevin Mitchell has a tendency to put the covers on 10 minutes before the rain arrives.
He's got to do as he's told by the umpires, and the Poms, you know, are probably a bit conservative anyway. And they're our two umpires, Mrs. Gould and Illingworth. But they've gone off at about 17 minutes before the scheduled tea break, so I would think now we'll have an early tea. Hopefully it won't hang around for too long. And the great thing about this ground, Kev, I've been here before, when can almost be underwater, and then within a couple of hours they're back out playing again, so the drainage and everything is fantastic. Been a good morning for Pakistan. They've gone from 2 for 70 to 2 for 131. Azhar Ali 61, Yunus Khan looking like a man who scored nearly 10,000 test runs, is 40. And interesting, we've seen five overs from Stark. 7.5 overs from Hazelwood. 5 overs from Bird. Only 4 overs from Nathan Lyon. I thought he was under bowled a little bit. And we've seen a couple of overs from Nick Maddinson bowling left-arm orthodox.
Trying to keep his spot on the side as an all-rounder, is he?
The captain must be voting for him, I would suggest. There you go.
Crikey.
So there it is, 2 for 131, with the Pakistanis still requiring 359 to win, 8 wickets in hand, but if it keeps raining, the pool's been cleared, the deck's been cleared, so the people are seeking shelter from the inclement weather. I'll keep an eye on it, Kev, and hopefully we've got some bright news and cricket down the track.
SEN Summer of Cricket, for High and Mighty. Big and tall, they've got you covered this summer. And Ashley and Martin. For a free consultation, call 13GROW.
13-4, Beefy Blake's in the studio with me, of course, now in the Guinness Book of Records, but still managing to talk to us, even though he's in that hallowed publication. 365daysofsport.com is the website. Cricket's not a sport that lends itself to a lot of musical accompaniment, no, is it?
Although saying that, the Barmy Army, how good are they?
Cricket's not a sport that lends itself to brilliant, musical accompaniment,
yes.
Is it?
But they've got Billy the Trumpeter, who is actually you know, a London Symphony Orchestra trumpeter who comes along on their tours. And they do sing Jerusalem at the start of every day's play as one. Yes, oh, fantastic. Okay. The Barmy Army know how to get going for that, so it's fantastic. So, they bring a bit of... something never really been seen, you know, at Test cricket before. Was well, an atmosphere.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they're too busy quaffing the, you know, having another G&T, yes. And another Lamington.
I could tell you a great story. I went to 2004, went to Lords to watch England and the West Indies, and I was at the gate coming in, and a guy rocked up. At Lords, on 2004, you could actually bring a bottle of wine in with you.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, jeez. And this guy came to the turnstile, and he had a bottle of red and a bottle of white. And the guy stopped him at the gate and said, "Sorry, sir, you can only bring in one bottle of wine." He goes, "Well, how am I know if they're going to serve fish or they're going to serve meat? What wine to drink?" He was absolutely bemused. He was covering all bases there. So Lord, it can only happen at Lord's.
Yes, very good point by that gentleman. It's 11-4. Back with more after this. It is 8-4 here on 11:16 SEN Melbourne's Home of Sport. It's Sunday Sports Central. Always happy to take your calls at any time, 9429 1116, or your text thoughts on 0433 98 1116, talking about songs, one of the things we're talking about, songs and sporting events and teams and all that, before, during and after. If you've got any, please share them on 9429 1116. Now, obviously, I know, even though the 365 days of sport has stopped, but you're still going to things and you're still... keeping yourself abreast of what's going on around the
definitely
world.
Never going to stop going to see sport. I mean, as we like to say, too much sport is never enough.
Exactly. Now, and what have you got coming up that you're looking at?
Funnily enough, because I was at the football last night, I missed the Australian Beatbox Championships, Kev.
You didn't?
I can't believe it.
Where were they?
They were at Grumpy's Green in Fitzroy.
Were they?
They were.
What's a Grumpy's Green?
Well, obviously the home of the Australian Beatbox Championships, but that was last night. I'm just trying to find some results from the Australian Beatbox Championships.
Banging that up on the wall yeah, above the front door now, home of the Australian Beatbox Championships.
So yeah, it would have been a decent crowd at Grumpy's Green last night.
Oh, I'm sure there would have been.
But in more serious things, up in Horsham right now, mm-hmm, is the World Sailplane Grand Prix. So it's a world championship, part of a like Formula One sailplanes. We probably more commonly known as gliders.
Oh, okay. That's what a sailplane is. I was going to ask.
So they... So apparently in each race, it's over a week, so they do five or six races, but apparently yesterday was cancelled due to bad weather up in Horsham.
Oh, okay.
So amazingly
enough.
Too
windy or something?
Too windy for gliders, that's it. Might have had a bit of rain or something, or it might have been too strong winds, fun enough, because obviously planes without engines, you know, a bit ropey sometimes if the winds are too strong. So races... You know, there's about 20 gliders in each race, and races are over about 200 kilometres, so take a couple of hours to go. So,
are these got people in them or not?
Yeah, they got people in them. Yeah, that's it. So
that would be why they've cancelled it, because of the weather, because there's this occupational health and
exactly
safety issues.
I know, talking about gliders, we, myself and Rob, as part of this whole thing, we went to the World Air Games in Dubai kind of late last year, and one of the disciplines was involving gliders, but they were drag racing down a runway. So they throw two gliders up in
that?
The air. Yeah, they throw two gliders up in the air. They do a little circuit in the air.
Is there someone in it?
Yeah, they're okay. Single pilots. So what they do, they fly together back down to the runway, and there is a start point. And these gliders are literally about 2 or 3 meters off the ground, and they drag race the length of the runway to get to a finish point. So it's literally like drag racing for gliders.
Wow.
It's amazing to see.
Would be good to see that last sort of 400 or 500 meters.
Yeah.
The preamble, the foreplay beforehand. Sorry.
Yeah, that's it. And when you're in the middle of a desert as well with baking hot sun, you're trying to find these little gliders in this sun where you're looking up into 40 degrees and it's absolutely killing you and it's burning your skin off as you speak. To try and watch, trying to find gliders around for 10, 15 minutes to see about 10 seconds of action as they go down the runway. But amazing to see, really, that glider drag racing is a thing.
At least with drag racing, and it, again, is because it's a 10-second sport or whatever, at least you get the preamble of seeing the, yeah, you know, the big engine and the big long, you know, cars and all that sort of stuff and the people involved, yeah, and all that. There's all that.
Yeah, that's
this
it.
Is like they're circling around like a plane that's been put, yeah, on hold at an airport.
So as I said at the time, if they'd put about 20 or 30 gliders up in the air and then made them drag race one after the other, yeah, like in pairs, it would have kept the action going, but they only had two tow planes, so to try, yeah, so that's why it was a little bit
tedious.
Slow. Tedious, yeah, especially when, you, like I said, you're getting your skin burned off in the middle of the desert. It's pretty extreme, but, I mean, the other thing, I mean, like I said, this time last year,
yeah, right,
we were actually in London. We were at the Olympia Horse of the Year show, so over a couple of days, it's always the big Christmas thing, and when I was growing up in the 80s, on kind of in the evening, in prime time on BBC One, they used to show the Horse of the Year show. Nowadays, with 200-odd channels and sports, you know, you can find anything.
We used to show that here at one stage.
Well, exactly, yeah, right. And, you know, so there's a big thing where they do puissance, and they actually do a Shetland pony Grand National. And these are jockeys that are between 9 and 12 or 13 years old on these three-foot-high horses racing around a circuit.
That's not, you can't do
funny.
That anymore.
They take it quite seriously.
You can't do that anymore.
This is no joke. A lot of the jockeys that are high on the circuit in National Hunt and steeplechase meetings in the UK have come through this Shetland pony race.
Oh, no, they haven't.
They, seriously, they really have. There's no betting on the Shetland Pony Grand National. There's a bit of fun stuff going on, but Shetland Pony
Short
Grand National.
Short-priced favourite.
Hey, cha-ching. Where's the cha-ching, lad? But the one thing that really stood out, and people come from all over the world to see this, is carriage driving. And they do call it extreme carriage driving. They put a course... Of course, on where you have three or four people in these carriages getting drawn by four horses, and the best guy in the world is a guy called Boyd Excel. Now, that's a great sporting
right.
name, and he's an Australian.
Is he
and
really?
He is an Australian, and he is the, well, we were told he is the greatest carriage driver of all time. So if anyone knows Boyd Excel...
Oh, there were 20 people ran up to him and said, no, he's not. It's actually Bill Smith.
So Boyd Excel, he is the man, and... He won the Extreme Carriage Driving Championship at the London Horse of the Year show. So,
right.
But he is the best in the world, and just what a great name, Boyd Excel. I love it. And
it must be fascinating traveling the world. These people who are in these little, they're not even niche.
No, that's exactly
they're
right.
They're smaller than niche.
Yep,
I don't know what the smaller thing than niche is, but they're yeah.
It's a nook. It's a nook of sport.
It could be.
So in terms of that, to be honest, myself and Rob, we learned so much, and we met these people who are so passionate about
yep.
these their little corner of the sports world. And it's no different whether you're a footballer, you play Aussie rules, or you play cricket, to these guys that drive carriages. They probably spend the same time training and practicing and honing their craft. That to get on a world stage, and like I said, we saw puissance. Now, I didn't really know what puissance was.
Well, I was about to say, what is that?
It's high jumping for horses.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they used to do it, you know, it's basically you start off and it's like high jumping.
Do good is out from somewhere, surely.
Well, they've restricted them. They used to go on and on until there was a knockout type thing, but now they've restricted the horses to 5 jumps only. But you're talking 8 foot high.
We've got the Australian cricket team's high performance team looking after the horses, keeping them to five jumps a year.
Yeah, so exactly right. And you can't come off a full run either when you're practicing. Yeah, indeed. So
the horses do the Fosbury flop.
Oh, that would be pretty... they do if they get it wrong.
Oh, sorry. I am taking this seriously. Yeah. I really am. Hey, look, it's been terrific to have you in the studio.
I love it. I love talking about our journey. I love talking about things like the Australian Beatbox Championships. We'll try and get a result for you at some stage. And, yeah.
Well, that'll be the lead story in the 4 o'clock
Fox
News.
I think they're straight there. But, yeah, I love bringing the world of these, like I said, these nook sports. Not niche sports, nook sports.
We'll hear more from you during the summer, no doubt.
Definitely.
Good to have you in, Beefy Blake. 365daysofsport.com is the website with all the details there.